international waters, trying to deliver some food, like symbolic, because my mission was to break the siege they are having illegally against these people, the Palestinian people, and in Gaza. It was very nice and very warm to have also all the media teams waiting in Barcelona. A friend I didn't know that was also waiting for me there, you know, from the Gaza movement, from this flotilla coalition. And of course, when I reached Logroño, that is my home, you can imagine my mom and my sister were there, that they were very, very worried about.
And do you see, Sergio, do you imagine more people joining the next time there is such a flotilla from other places in the world? You just have 30 seconds.
I'm pretty sure that this is going to happen, you know, because now more and more people is knowing what is happening. And not only, you know, we are a lot of different countries working on it. You know, it's not only the countries we've been in this flotilla, because it happened in other flotillas, and they attacked this.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, Sergio. Sergio Toribio is a Spanish activist and member of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. Special thanks to the team at Skyhop Youth Media Arts Center, Larissa Trout, Don Barfus, Maya Hardy, Mary Allison, Brian Barrios. I am Nermeen Sheikh in New York with Amy Goodman in Salt Lake City.
I'm Naomi Klein, and you are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Join KBOO around the campfire. Become a member during Camp KBOO's Summer Drive, taking place now through June 29th. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, protesters camp outside the Portland ICE facility.
Trump's birthday celebrations will be met with national protests this weekend.
And in international news, a group of Israeli officers refuse to serve their government.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 11th, 2025. KBOO is currently in our summer membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm David Chittenden.
And I'm Josh Salem. Yesterday, two more asylum seekers were arrested in Portland by federal immigration officers after leaving their hearings at immigration court. One was from Ecuador, the other from Venezuela. District Judge Michael Simon ordered ICE not to remove the two detainees from the state of Oregon. This makes at least four asylum seekers arrested in Portland recently. Lawyers representing the U.S. Department of Homeland Security motioned to dismiss the cases of each asylum seeker before their immediate detainment after the hearings. This is an emerging pattern which also occurred for the previous two asylum seekers. It has also been seen in at least 19 cities across 13 states, often committed by plainclothes officers. Several immigration attorneys have accused the government in court filings of manipulation of the immigration system to deny asylum seekers due process. Homeland Security has made a statement saying the arrests are a shift in policy and asylum seekers will still have a chance to advance their case.
Last night, Department of Homeland Security, Immigrations and Customs Enforcement agents opened fire with pepper bullets, rubber bullets, mace, and flashbangs on the peaceful protesters who were standing in the driveway singing and chanting for ICE to get out of Portland. Dozens of people protested the Trump administration's immigration enforcement policies outside the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office in Portland from Tuesday afternoon into the early hours of Wednesday. The protests started peacefully, but in the evening about 9 officers with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, along with a tactical vehicle, moved in. The officers used pepper spray, pepper bullets, marker bullets, and several flashbangs to disperse demonstrators. Portland police had been out of sight, but a little after midnight, at least 3 Portland Police Bureau cruisers arrived, sirens and their lights flashing. About the same time, protesters outside the ICE building declared they were going for a walk and temporarily left the area to de-escalate the situation. KBOO reporter Hannah Francis has more on the zeitgeist of the protesters.
Today is day 5 of the Portland protests against ICE and their mass detainment of asylum seekers and other people in Oregon, Los Angeles, and all across the United States. In Portland, there have been 4 people detained by ICE in the last week, and as of early June, ICE has detained over 50,000 people in the United States. Families are being ripped apart. Protesters are camped outside of the ICE facility on Southwest McAdam in downtown Portland and have been for the last few nights. I spoke with an organizer.
We are at 4310 South McAdam. We are occupying the space right next door to Immigration Customs Enforcement. We're here because we're tired. There's a whole lot of mischief going on when it comes to Immigration Customs Enforcement, Department of Homeland Security, and things like that. The mistreatment of people in their custody, the way Donald Trump is going about, it's a roundup, and it's sick, and we hate it. It's just, it's our duty to be out here.
Mm-hmm. And so, will you describe the scene for me a little bit?
We got some people out here. We're holding signs. People are using their voices. We got people waving flags out here. A lot of drivers driving by, honking in support. Some of the neighbors have come by and shown their support, offered their help with just people out here that need respite for a little bit. Yeah.
And how long have folks been out here?
This is day 4 of the occupation. It started originally as solidarity for LA, and now everywhere else, as well as the families that are going through the kidnapping of people. Yeah. I would say come out and join us. There's an Occupy ICE PDX Facebook page. You can connect on there. Support can come in the form of dropping off items. There's always a need for food. No more water, but we do need food. If you want to support financially, Easy Street on Venmo is where they can send donations to if they want to support financially. But other than that, I would say come out and join us. I know people can sometimes be afraid of what it looks like out here and to show up, but I promise we're all nice people. We appreciate the support of people that show up and come and just be with us and hold space. It's important for our neighbors to know that people support them, that they're seen and that they're heard, and there's a lot of empathy out here and people tired of the mess. And abolish ICE. It needs to go. It's a sick entity, as well as everybody else that works for them. Like you have a hard time wrapping your head around people choosing to do things like this. Yeah, it's sick.
Before the ICE agents assaulted protesters, there had been peaceful protests for hours. Common chants included "ICE out of Portland," "Quit your job," and Trump and ICE have got to go. There were a few small skirmishes with the Department of Homeland Security exiting the building to shoot pepper bullets at people who stood in their driveway, asking ICE to leave. Protesters sang and spoke poetry into microphones and offered other protesters food, water, and medical aid when necessary. Another person told me about a petition being circulated on organize4.org to ask City Council to revoke the permit for the ICE detention facility in Portland. It currently has over 3,500 signatures, and it needs at least 4,000.
Yeah, about 2 weeks ago at City Council, a few folks came forward with a petition to have City Council revoke the permit that ICE has to have their facility here. So I think their aim is to bring the completed petition back to City Council, because during the City Council proceedings, the petition didn't have all the signatures that they needed. So that was what was requested of them.
The protesters are still outside of the ICE facility, advocating for ICE to leave the people of Portland and all across the United States alone.
Now the borders hum at night, low and hungry, like spirits restless in their cages, ghosts of children swallowed by deserts, of mothers whose names dissolved in salt water, of fathers shot beneath a foreign sun, all whisper beneath the wind.
For the KBOO Evening News, I'm Hanna Francis.
Oregon is ranked 43rd overall for education, according to the 2025 Kids Count data book, which measures the well-being of children. The data show that Oregon is struggling in many areas, and one expert says the numbers are pushing the state to improve. Isabel Charlet has more on the story.
Oregon maintained a troubling ranking, holding at 43rd in the nation for children's education, according to the 2025 Kids Count Data Book, a national report developed by the Annie E. Casey Foundation. Jenna Marie of Our Children Oregon says both fourth grade reading and eighth grade math proficiency have hit all-time lows in the state, with only about a quarter of students meeting benchmarks. These numbers are not far from the national average. Marie says since it is difficult to catch up in reading and math in later years, many Oregon students are being sent into the workforce underprepared for success. Even though the data is grim, Murray adds, it should serve as a motivator.
It's kind of like a pulse check. Here's where we are, and now we know where we need to go from here. We know we really need to focus on improving success in math and reading, and just need to go up from there.
The data book examines states based on four categories. Oregon continued to perform poorly in economic well-being, but showed improvement in the family and community category. The report aims to guide policy in providing for the country's children and their families. Thanks in part to ample Medicaid coverage, the state moved up from 12th to 8th in the nation for children's physical health. However, Marie notes that youth mental health is declining, with child and teen mortality rising 35% between 2019 and 2023.
We would love to see more mental health screenings and availability of mental health services for young people.
Leslie Bossier with the Annie E. Casey Foundation says the nation can't lose sight of the racial disparities still seen in these indicators, particularly among Black, Latino, and Native American children.
For example, the child well-being outcomes on 15 out of 16 indicators for Native kids are lower than the national average. If you look at Black kids, it's 8 out of 16 indicators.
She says those results are similar for Latino children, too. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
Military deployments in L.A. spark debate over federal overreach, with echoes of Kent State. Protests seem to be spreading, and critics warn that Medicaid cuts could shutter rural hospitals. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
So all you hear is a rhetoric about ICE being racist, about ICE being Nazis and terrorists, and Governor Newsom feeds that.
Border czar Tom Homan is defending immigration enforcement and the White House decision to deploy thousands of National Guard troops and active duty Marines to Los Angeles. Homan says he has no intention of arresting California Governor Gavin Newsom after he and President Donald Trump floated the idea. Newsom accuses the administration of intentionally provoking demonstrations with a heavy-handed response. The state is suing for the troops to be withdrawn. L.A. Mayor Karen Bass says the deployments are unjustified.
Those of us in Los Angeles understand that the unrest that has happened are a few blocks within the downtown area. The visuals make it seem as though our entire city is in flames, and it is not the case at all.
She adds that violence and property damage are unacceptable and will be prosecuted. The protests have spread to other cities, including Chicago, San Francisco, and New York. Police say they have arrested 350 people nationwide. Trump has previously said he could use an 1807 wartime emergency law to avoid the ban on deploying the military inside America. A former Marine in California who asks to go by his first name calls that worrying. Art says they're armed and trained for war, not civilian law enforcement.
Marines are trained to use lethal force. Policing does come with a risk. Innocent people could get in the way. There's no indication that they're not going to get struck. I mean, it is a very dangerous situation.
A museum director at Kent State compares it to 1970, when four students at an anti-war protest were killed by the National Guard. Allison Kaplan heads the May 4 Visitor Center at the University in Ohio.
We encourage people to explore our website and visit the museum to learn more and make their own connections.
The administration has tried to use a different wartime law to deport nearly 140 Venezuelans to El Salvador. Federal courts have ruled the migrants have to be granted due process, but the Department of Justice is asking an appeals court to pause that ruling. Senate Republicans say they have adjusted the huge budget and policy bill enough to avoid a filibuster, removing provisions not related to taxes and spending. Meanwhile, new projections from the Congressional Budget Office say cuts in the bill could push 16 million people off of Medicaid, including 140,000 in Colorado. Josh Bivens with the Economic Policy Institute warns that would devastate the state's rural hospitals.
Lots of them are going to be forced out of business, and there's going to be closures of hospitals, especially in rural counties.
Republicans say the $700 billion in cuts would target fraud and waste without reducing coverage. Democrats point out that would go to extend tax breaks for the wealthy. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report on Street Roots cover article by Editor-in-Chief Kay Rambo. At 6, it's Flashpoints. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will show a low of 51 degrees. Tomorrow will have a high of 72 degrees. It will be partly cloudy. Today in history, 249 years ago, the Second Continental Congress creates the Committee of Five to draft the Declaration of Independence. The committee operated until July 5, 1776, when the Declaration was published. The quote of the day is from American religious leader and politician Brigham Young, who said, "True independence and freedom can only exist in doing what's right."
Last Friday, a federal judge in Phoenix denied a pair of motions seeking preliminary injunction to stop the Oak Flatland swap between the U.S. Forest Service and the multinational mining company Resolution Copper. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull. Last Friday, a federal judge in Phoenix denied a pair of motions seeking preliminary injunction to stop the Oak Flat land swap between the U.S. Forest Service and multinational mining company Resolution Copper. KJZZ's Gabriel Peterazio has details.
Federal Judge Dominic Lanza considered their pleas premature amid a nearly two-hour hearing at the Sandra Day O'Connor Courthouse. In fact, Lanza had admittedly made up his mind before plaintiffs, including the San Carlos Apache Tribe and a coalition of conservation and recreation groups, showed up in court. The judge said granting their request would subvert an act of Congress. However, Lanza also ruled that the Forest Service could not proceed with the land exchange until the 60-day mark following the government public publishing its final environmental impact statement for the proposed copper mining project. The federal agency is expected to release that report later this month. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Piatarazzo.
Roughly 73 square miles of forest land in Northern California have been returned to the Yurok tribe in what's being called the largest land back conservation project in state history. Christina Onnested reports.
The land back more than doubles the Yurok tribe's ancestral land holdings, including salmon habitat and areas of cultural and spiritual significance. Tiana Williams-Clausen is the Yurok tribe's wildlife department director.
Reacquiring landscapes like this allows us to heal, to work towards healing a wound that was inflicted not only on the lands but our hearts when these lands were taken away from us.
Josh King of Western Rivers Conservancy says his organization bought and transferred the land to the tribe in phases, raising $56 million for the conservation deal.
We're thrilled to announce that we've transferred the final phase of land to the Yurok tribe and completed creation of the Blue Creek Salmon Sanctuary and the Yurok Tribal Community Forest.
Historically, the Yurok tribe had fished, hunted, and gathered here. The tribe lost 90% of its territory through gold rush massacres and disease from settlers. Timber companies owned and managed the land for over a century. Tim Hayden is the Yurok tribe's deputy executive director of natural resources.
This is an incredible opportunity for the tribe to really assert its self-determination, manage its own resources for the benefit of both fish and wildlife, provide access for ceremonial and subsistence and gathering needs of the tribe.
Salmon and trout populations were once the third largest in the Klamath. Now with the dam removal complete, there's hope those populations will rebound. Pergish Carlson is a river guide with the Yurok.
Generations from here will really see the benefits of it, even when I'm gone or whatever. And that's what I always kind of like smile about the future generations, how good it could be even from now.
I'm Christina Onnested, reporting for National Native News in Northern California.
And on this day in 1971, federal officers removed the last few Native activists from Alcatraz. Launched November 20th, 1969, the occupation of Alcatraz Island was carried out by the group Indians of All Tribes. They claimed Alcatraz was rightfully theirs through the 1868 Treaty of Fort Laramie, and by the federal government's closing of the prison island in 1963, designating it surplus federal property. At its peak, the occupation saw roughly 400 natives and allies. Celebrities like Jane Fonda, Marlon Brando, and Jonathan Winters all visited. In the final months, power and telephone services were cut off, and a young girl fell to her death, devastating her parents and causing them to leave. Despite setbacks, many see this occupation as the launchpad of modern American Indian activism. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull in the KLCC studios of Eugene, Oregon.
On Saturday, June 14th, Portland will join hundreds of cities all over the U.S. holding protests under the slogan, No Kings. No Kings is a name for the organized protests and not a specific group, with their main statement on their website being, quote, "In America, we don't do kings," end quote. The protests are in response to Donald Trump's multi-million-dollar birthday parade, which takes place during other important celebrations and is widely considered a waste of resources. It will also be Flag Day, in a celebration of the United States Army's 250th anniversary. The theme of the celebration is This Will Defend. No Kings has over 1,800 rallies taking place in all 50 states. Organizers intentionally are avoiding having a march in Washington, D.C. to avoid the suggestion they are anti-veteran. Instead, the flagship march and largest rally will be held in Philadelphia. No Kings has made the statement on their website, quote, "Real power isn't staged in Washington. It rises up everywhere else," end quote. Donald Trump has stated that anyone protesting the parade will, quote, "be met with very big force." Trump made a statement on Tuesday, June 10th, during a speech where he called protesters, quote, "animals and a foreign enemy." The organizers of No Kings are committed to ensuring all protests and rallies are nonviolent and peaceful.
41 Israeli military intelligence officers are refusing to serve in combat operations in what they call a, quote, "unnecessary eternal war," end quote, in Gaza. In a letter to Netanyahu, and later posted online, they say the government's orders are clearly illegal and hostages have been given death sentences. They refuse to take part in a, quote, "war designed to preserve the rule of Netanyahu," end quote, and appease, quote, "anti-democratic and messianic elements in his government," end quote. One of the officers who signed the letter told The Guardian, quote, "The hope is that as many people as possible will challenge the legitimacy of this operation and of this government," end quote. In April, 250 reservists and alumni from Unit 8200, the Elite Military Surveillance Division, urged the government to end the war, but stopped short of calling for a general refusal to serve.
On May 16th, a video began circulating on TikTok that showed Egyptian and Chinese planes flying over a pyramid in Egypt. The captioning stated, quote, "China had recently promised to provide food aid to 60,000 families, and now it has fulfilled that promise," end quote. The video and multiple others that had showcased the story were proven false when the aircraft was proven to be a plane used by the U.S. Air Force and other countries in Europe. Both Chinese and Egyptian spokespeople have stated that it was a joint military exercise. That exercise took place from April 19th to May 4th and did not relate to humanitarian efforts. It was entitled the Eagles of Civilization 2025 and showcased Chinese and Egyptian jets, surveillance aircraft, and refuelers. The State Information Service of Egypt states the exercise was for, quote, "training, multi-role fighter jets from both sides conducting joint sorties to simulate precision attacks, asset defense, and aerial refueling drills," end quote. China and Egypt had come into 2025 finishing off their, quote, "golden decade," end quote, partnership, in which both countries grew their information and communications, as well as energy, food, economic growth, and cultural exchange. A spokesperson for China's Ministry of Foreign Affairs has stated, quote, "China has cooperated with Egypt, Jordan, and other parties to provide multiple batches of humanitarian supplies to Gaza. The most recent aid that entered Gaza was on May 20th, where 100 trucks of goods were allowed to enter through the Kerem Shalom crossing."
Dan wonders, how illegal does Trump have to get?
"Last Friday, I saw 36 folks along 101 and Garibaldi with signs supporting veterans, not cutting services for them. One of thousands of small protests happening around the country that never make the media. A curfew kept things peaceful at ICE headquarters in L.A. last night. The police chief said, we don't do immigration enforcement. Governor Newsom in California have sued Trump's militarization. Can California lead the way to Trump crumbling as he targets the state as if it was Harvard or maybe Palestine? His powers know no limit. Just say the magic word insurrection and send in the Marines against a couple laws, using powers he doesn't have, spreading the fear that this could happen to anyone. Anywhere. The example of L.A. hushing protesters the way attacks on Harvard kept other universities on one knee. Protest is now against the law and punishable by our own military. America's world probably won't end with a whimper, and I am worried about the bangs. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael."
You're listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael and David Chittenden. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Farah Siddiqui, Brian Bull, and Isabel Charlie. The Interim Evening News Director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm David Chittenden.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO's News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis.
Today, we take a deep dive into Street Roots cover article, an investigation in partnership with ProPublica's local reporting network. Portland said it was investing in homeless people's safety, and deaths skyrocketed. The city responded to an increase in homeless deaths by intensifying encampment sweeps and adding emergency shelter at the expense of permanent housing. Experts say this has perpetuated the problem. I'm joined by Street Roots editor-in-chief Kay Rambo. Welcome, Kay. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, first of all, I'd just like to take a moment to talk about the 8 awards that Street Roots just won with SPJ, and also acknowledge this big partnership with ProPublica. Can you tell me a little bit about both of those things?
Yeah. So every year, Street Roots enters its work into the regional Society of Professional Journalists contest. It includes Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Idaho, and Montana. And we were fortunate enough to win 6 first place awards and 2 second place awards this year.
Nice. Will you tell me a little bit about some of the articles that won?
Yeah. So, I mean, folks who read the spring anthologies in April will be familiar with these. And these were some of our bigger stories throughout last year. But I wrote some stories on prison deaths, for instance, examining the state prison healthcare system, and in particular, trying to understand why deaths were